Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. April 9, 2018, Skype class in Hilo, Hawaii, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 30. Description by Lord Kapila of Adverse Fruit of Activities, Text 1. Kapila Uvacha.
Kapila Uvacha.
Tasyai tasya jano nunam.
Tasyai tasya jano nunam.
Nayam vedol vikramam. Kalyamano pibalino.
Kalyamano pibalino.
Vayor eva ganan bali.
Vayor eva ganan bali.
This chant. Kapilaha uvacha.
Kapila uvacha.
Lord Kapila said.
Lord Kapila said.
Tasya etasya.
Tasya.
Of this very time factor.
Of this very time factor.
Janaha.
Janaha.
Person.
Person.
Nunam.
Nunam.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Na.
Na.
Not.
Not.
I am.
I am.
This.
This.
Veda.
Veda. Veda.
Knows.
No.
Uru Vikramam.
Uru Vikramam.
The great strength.
Great strength.
Kalyamanaha.
Kalyamana.
Being carried off.
Being carried off.
Being carried off.
Api.
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 Although.
Although. Although.
Balinaha.
Balinaha. Balinaha.
Powerful.
Powerful.
Vayuho.
Vayuho.
Of the wind.
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 Eva.
Eva.
Like.
Like.
Gana.
Gana.
Of clouds.
Of clouds.
Avalihi.
Avalihi.
A mass.
A mass.
Muted. Unmuted.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The personality of Godhead said, as a mass of clouds does not know the powerful influence of the wind, a person engaged in material consciousness does not know the powerful strength of the time factor by which he is carried. Purport. The great politician Pandita named Chanakya said that even one moment of time cannot be returned, even if one is prepared to pay millions of dollars. One cannot calculate the amount of loss there is in wasting valuable time. Either materially or spiritually, one should be very alert in utilizing the time which he has at his disposal. A conditioned soul lives in a particular body for a fixed measurement of time, and it is recommended in the scriptures that within that small measurement of time, one has to finish Krishna consciousness and thus gain release from the influence of the time factor. But unfortunately, those who are not in Krishna consciousness are carried away by the strong power of time without their knowledge, as clouds are carried by the wind. Kapila uvacha tasyai tasya jano nunam nayam vedoru vikramam kalyamano pi balino vayor eva ganan valihi. The personality of Godhead said, as a mass of clouds does not know the powerful influence of the wind, a person engaged in material consciousness does not know the powerful strength of the time factor by which he is being carried. So, Prabhupada says something very wonderful in this purport, that we have to use time properly in order to gain release from time. So time, of course, in the spiritual world is conspicuous by its absence and is the first creation in material energy of the material world. So Mahavishnu, lying on the causal ocean, glances at material energy. That glance is time, and that time is Lord Shiva. Of course, time is the great creator and the great destroyer. And this time, past, present, and future, gives us the illusion, kartaham iti manyate, that I am the doer. So it's very interesting that this first and substantial, basal, foundational element of illusion, time, is the means by which we can get out of time. Does not a thing, when applied therapeutically, cure a disease which is caused by that very same thing, Narada Muni says to Vyasadeva. That if you turn milk into yogurt, it can cure digestive issues from drinking too much milk. So when we use time properly, we get free of time. Another analogy is given, that a fire in the wood burns the wood. So you make a fire in the wood and it burns the wood. So time is the main manifestation of the Lord, particularly for the demons and the subterranean heavenly planets. They are not so aware of the passing of time. There's no sunrise and sunset, there's no seasons. But the Sudarshan Chakra, the wheel of time, comes and destroys everything. And of course, for the normal atheistic persons, they have to surrender at death, which is also called time. So, how to use time? We have here Prabhupada's talking about using time in our short span of life, and I was thinking about the word deadline. Deadline, when you're going to accomplish something, you have a task to do. We say there's a deadline. There's a line at which you die, right? And a deadline implies that there's some kind of consequence for missing that time. You know, the plane will take off without you. You'll miss an important meeting and you won't have the input you're supposed to have. You'll lose your job. You won't make it to your own wedding. There'll be some consequence. And of course, those of us who are engaged in self-directed projects sometimes create our own deadline. Sometimes we even create an artificial deadline, just so that we'll finish the task. Right? I work with my son on a number of publishing projects, and he was saying, when we were working on learning to read, he said, if there's going to be a deadline, it has to be a real deadline. It can't just be a manufactured deadline. So I was saying, well, let's get this done by Janmashtami, because Janmashtami at Bhaktivedanta Manor, we can sell more books than we can sell anyplace else. So that's a good real deadline. If we miss that, we have to wait another year before we have that same opportunity. So you can have a deadline for an opportunity that you lose otherwise. So in one sense, nahanyate hanyamane sharire, there is no such thing as death for the soul. And so in one sense, there is no deadline. There's no deadline at all. We are eternal and we have eternal time to become Krishna conscious. But in another sense, in a particular life, when we have a human body and we have the opportunity to become Krishna conscious, especially a very good opportunity, and we don't know what kind of opportunity we will have in the next life, and best to consider that things should be finished in this life. So we have this sort of dichotomy, that we should have enthusiasm to finish Krishna consciousness in this life, feeling that we may not get such a good chance again. This opportunity may pass if we don't take advantage of it. And this gives us enthusiasm, utsaha. At the same time, misapplied enthusiasm can become the mode of passion. So we also have to have patience, because we are eternal, and in this endeavor there's no loss and diminution. which means that if we have, of course, only patience, then we become lethargic. So this blend of enthusiasm and patience, and of course, Rupa Goswami adds to this confidence, that if we engage properly in Krishna consciousness, whether it's this life or another life, we will attain perfection. So let's look first at the enthusiasm, which is the main point Prabhupada is making in this particular purport. Enthusiasm means I want it now. I want Krishna consciousness now. I don't want to wait. So, good example of enthusiasm. So if this was a live class, I would ask people to give examples. But a good example of enthusiasm is Dhruva Maharaj. And we know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu loved to read the story of Dhruva. He would read the story of Dhruva over and over again with Gadadhar Pandit. And they would cry. What is so amazing about the story of Dhruva? I mean, many things, but the thing that jumps out at us is his enthusiasm. So he was slighted by his stepmother. I think all of us get slighted and insulted by people in our lives. And probably it has started in childhood. But we don't immediately run off to the forest and engage in severe meditation. Now, that's enthusiasm. I mean, he was only 5 years old. If you can think of a five-year-old child that you know, the concept of them having the determination, the enthusiasm, just say, I want it now. I want it now. I don't care what I have to do to get it. I want it now. In this life. And he was so determined and so enthusiastic. So, Srila Prabhupada says to us, do not take your birth again and again in this Kali Yuga. Be enthusiastic now. Of course, especially in the early days of the Hare Krishna movement, I think that those of us who left everything and moved into an ashram had this often, this kind of do it now, you can die at any minute, sort of enthusiasm. And I think of Shivaram Swami, who left college 2 weeks before he would have gotten his undergraduate degree. Left his wife because although she was interested in Krishna consciousness, she wasn't interested to the same extent that he was. And just dropped everything and moved into the ashram. And you know, he was the only child of his parents. His mother was frantic that he left his wife and left his education. And said, you know, I could die at any moment. So this was the mood. You know, it was the mood. We dropped out of school. We left our jobs. We left our families. We just dropped everything. You know, of course, the gopis were like this. Not that we were gopis, but you know, the gopis were like this. Krishna played his flute, and they just left. They had chapatis on the fire. You know, they were taking care of babies. They were serving their husbands and their elders food. And then they just left. And they left in such a hurry. You know, generally, if a young girl is going to meet a young boy for a romantic tryst, the girl will take some time to decorate herself and look attractive. But the gopis were in such a hurry that they tried to do that. They made an attempt to decorate themselves nicely for Krishna, but they were in such a hurry. They were so eager. They were so enthusiastic. They put their saris on upside down and inside out. They put their only one earring in. They put their belt on their ankles so they were dragging as they were walking and so forth. They put things in the wrong place in the wrong way and decorated one eye. And, you know, they were just so absorbed that we have to find Krishna now, that they were even neglectful in preparing themselves for Krishna, which, of course, Krishna was very pleased by their enthusiasm. So this I have to have it now. I have to have it now, and I have to have it at any cost. Of course, this I have to have it now at any cost that can be misused. Because I have to have it now at any cost is a hallmark of the mode of ignorance. People in the mode of ignorance want immediate gratification of their senses, and they don't care about the consequences. That's the ultimate definition of lust. I want some satisfaction now, And whatever the consequences are, I'm not even going to think about it. You know, criminal activities are in this mood. I want money now, and even if it means I do something wrong and I have to go to jail, I want the money now. I want what I want, and I want it now. And, you know, to hell with the consequences. So one has to be very careful that in the name of enthusiasm for Krishna consciousness, that one does not fall into this mode of ignorance or the mode of passion, you know, the mode of passion, frantic endeavor. Of course, mode of passion is dharmic. You think of Raja as the kings. So they were, although the great endeavor would be according to dharma. But the mode of ignorance, if you have the mode of ignorance mixed with passion, then it's, I don't care what the means is to get what I want. I don't care about the means, I don't care about the consequences. So one has to be extremely careful because, as Lord Kapiladev explains, one can do devotional service in the modes of nature. And it's very easy for something selfish and egotistical to masquerade as Krishna consciousness. In fact, it's quite common. Raghunath Das Goswami discusses this phenomena with the metaphor of donkey urine, that he says, you think you're bathing in the ocean of love, but actually you're bathing in donkey urine, which is burning you. And we find that when people do things that are artificial and harmful in the name of enthusiasm, they regret it later, which again is in the modes of nature. You know, charity given with regret later, under duress, because somebody told you to do it, is in the mode of passion. So one must be careful about the giving the charity of one's life, giving the charity of one's time with enthusiasm, but at the same time not affected by the modes of passion and ignorance. Well, then we have the other side of the coin, which is patience. So some examples of patience. An interesting example of patience is Hiranyakashipu. In the Bhagavatam 7:3, verse 9 to 10, he says, the supreme person within this universe, Lord Brahma, has gotten his exalted post by dint of severe austerities, mystic power, and trance. Consequently, after creating the universe, he has become the most worshipful demigod within it. Since I am eternal and time is eternal, I shall endeavor for such austerity, mystic power, and trance for many, many births, and thus I shall occupy the same post occupied by Lord Brahma. So, Hiranyakashipu has this patience. He says, since I am eternal and time is eternal, I am willing to work for many births to get what I want. So that's another good example in the devotional line, is that of Rukmini. So this is from Bhagavatam 10:52-43. In Rukmini's letter to Krishna, she writes, O lotus-eyed one, great souls like Lord Shiva hanker to bathe in the dust of your lotus feet and thereby destroy their ignorance. If I cannot obtain your mercy, I shall simply give up my vital force, which will become weak from the severe penances I will perform. Then after hundreds of lifetimes of endeavor, I may obtain your mercy. So Rukmini is saying, as Prabhupada explains in Krishna book, she's going to do severe austerities in this life, and if that doesn't work, she's going to do severe austerities life after life, such severe austerities that she's going to die from her austerities. And in this way, she's going to keep on going until she obtains Krishna. And Prabhupada says that this determination and patience is the only price to obtain Krishna. Of course, we have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nadanam Nadanam Nasundarin Kavitam Bha Jagadisha Kamaye, Mama Janmani Janmani Ishwari Bhavatad Bhakti Ahoy Tiki Pray. He's saying that I'm willing to work life after life. I'm not saying that I need to get perfection in this life, whatever it takes. So we see this, it's interesting, the Prabhupada says in the purport, either materially or spiritually, one should be very alert in utilizing the time. So we see materially an example of Hiranyakashipu. Another material example is that of Amba, who went through austerities for many lives in order to kill Bhishma. And spiritually, we see it in the example of Rukmini and the example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this kind of patience. But again, this kind of patience can be a manifestation of the modes of nature. Interestingly enough, in the mode of ignorance, although there's the mood that, you know, whatever I want now, and whatever the consequences, and whatever, I don't care about how I get it or what the consequences of getting it are. In the mode of ignorance, we also find a lot of lethargy, and a lot of determination is just dreaming. You know, somebody's just drinking beer and watching the television and thinking, oh, you know, someday I'm going to be a millionaire. Someday I'm going to discover a great thing to change the world, you know. Someday I'm going to be a superhero. And they don't actually do anything about it. Their determination never goes beyond dreaming. And as Prabhupada says, something that can be done in a few hours, they put off for years. So we don't want to have patience become, again, the mode of ignorance. And we see this phenomena in devotees when they say, well, you know, I'm not going to make it in this lifetime anyway. It's too hard, you know, so I don't need to channel my 16 rounds anyway, and so forth. You know, let me just take it easy and go slowly. I don't want to push myself and burn out, and therefore, you know, I'll just be patient. So that's in the mode of ignorance. And then we can see that the problems with each of these come from a lack of confidence. So the reason that the modes of ignorance and passion masquerade as enthusiasm and as patience, and then they trip us up, right? When people are seemingly enthusiastic but actually doing bhakti in the modes of passion or ignorance, or they're seemingly patient but actually doing bhakti in the modes of passion or ignorance, what happens is that one doesn't get the result. One doesn't get the result. It's very interesting. There's this son of devotees, and I don't know the young man that well. I'm not sure how young he is. He's probably in his 30s, I don't know, 20s, 30s. I don't know him personally, but I was very good friends with his mother before she got married many, many years ago, and she's left her body. But anyway, he joined a particular Gaudiya group and got very close to his spiritual master. Actually lived in his spiritual master's ashram as a brahmachari. Was very devoted to the point that he gave his spiritual master a lot of his personal money that had been saved for his education and so many things. And he left. He left. Not only did he leave Krishna consciousness, but he also became more or less anti-religious and anti-God. And it's interesting because his reasons for his choice, he always presented them in terms that he felt that his spiritual master was corrupt, that his spiritual master was egotistical and selfish and corrupt. So he always presented it like that. But just the other day, he posted something, and I keep up with him basically out of respect for his mother, and I feel that she would be happy if I would keep up with him. Anyway, he posted something the other day that says, you can judge by the fruits, and the real question is whether or not Krishna consciousness gives the result. And then I thought, oh, that's his real complaint. His real complaint is not his guru did this or that, and his guru said this or that. That's not his real complaint. His real complaint is that he didn't achieve God realization. He dedicated everything. He worked really hard. He gave up sleep. He gave up his money. He gave up his independent life and became a sold-out servant of his spiritual master for a few years, and he didn't achieve what he had expected. He didn't achieve God realization and self-realization, and the ecstasy and knowledge that he had come for. And so he decided that, well, the process doesn't work, and therefore it's not real. Like Prabhupada says that the demons think that spiritual realization is a myth, that there is no such thing, that the best you can get is the temporary happiness of this world, and just, you know, be satisfied with that. Of course, nobody is actually satisfied with that, but that's their policy. Be satisfied with a little bit of sensual and mental happiness that you get from time to time in this world with great price. So the question here, the balancing force that makes us be both enthusiastic and patient, and thus allows us to use time properly, is this confidence. And this is not just a confidence in the process of Krishna consciousness, but it's also a confidence in the love and the mercy of the Lord. It's a confidence and faith that that if we are doing the best we can on our part, that Krishna is going to bring us to perfection in the fastest, easiest way. Whether that involves this life or several lives, whether that involves 5 minutes or 50 years, that it will be the fastest and best way for us. And I know as a teacher, when I was teaching children for 27 years, this phenomena of balancing enthusiasm and patience with confidence was something that I encountered quite frequently. In the school that I ran, we strongly encouraged the children to progress at their own pace and in their own way. So we didn't say, okay, if you're 8 years old, this is what you have to do just because you're 8. We would give them an initial diagnostic test, how well did they know different subjects, and then we would place them accordingly. And if we saw that they needed more time, we'd give them more time. I mean, I remember one boy we took through kindergarten math 3 times in 1 year before we would have him go on to first grade. And then there were other students that skipped years or went through material very quickly. And you know, we might take someone very quickly through mathematics, but take them at a regular pace through reading and so forth. It was very individualized. So because we had this individualized program, there were a number of students who would make requests periodically to jump over things or speed through things. And what we would do is we would give them a test. All right, well, you know, you say you're good at it. Of course, I didn't really need to give them a test because working with them very individually, I already had a very good handle on what they could and could not do. And the purpose of the test was not for me. The purpose of the test was for them. Just like when Krishna tests us, he already knows. He doesn't require to give us some kind of a formal or informal test because he's very aware already of where we are. But the test is really for us. Anyway, so I would give the students a test. Let's say they wanted to jump ahead in mathematics, so you give them a test in mathematics, and you'd give them a test for the end of the level they were in, and then if they wanted to jump ahead, if they did well in that, you'd give them a test at progressively higher levels until they got a low enough score that you knew where they should be placed. And that's also interesting, you know, when we do poorly in some kind of test from Krishna, we shouldn't become discouraged. Doing poorly in some kind of test simply indicates to us what should be our level of function. Anyway, probably 1 or 2 times out of 10, the students would actually do very well in tests, and I would be able to move them ahead. But the rest of the time, they would do poorly in the tests and simply confirm that the level they were already on was the correct level for them. And when the students learned that they were already at the correct level, they would often get very discouraged. But, you know, they had to have some confidence that we teachers were trained and experienced, and we were going to get them to graduation. If they stuck with our program, we were going to get them to graduation, and if we could see that there was a point that they could jump ahead, we could do it. I remember one of my students at one point just decided, I'm going to learn grammar this year. You know, when I was a student, I used to wonder, why are they teaching us the same grammatical principles, you know, for 12 years? Teaching us what is a noun, what is a verb, what is an adverb. You know, like we already learned it the first time. Why do we have to keep learning it? And when I became a teacher, I immediately understood that the reason that they do that is that most kids don't learn it the first time or the second or the third or the fourth. So, you know, you're teaching the same principles at a slightly higher level each time, but you're teaching the same principles, you know, over and over again. So one of my students decided, hey, you know, I'm just going to do this. And she applied herself, and in that year, she really learned grammar. And I said, after that, you know, you don't need to study grammar anymore. You know, you've already learned it. So you see that also. you know, the teacher is working with, how determined are you? You know, you have students who say, I want to go faster, but then you say, okay, well, if you want to go faster, this would also happen quite a lot. The student would say they wanted to go faster, and I'd say, okay, well, the way to go faster means that you have to work not only harder, but a little differently. For example, in mathematics, usually you present a new or slightly new concept with each lesson, and you do some practices in the new concept, and then you spend the rest of the lesson mixing things with the new concept with review things. So I said, if you want to go faster, basically you have less time for review. You have to keep learning new things that, you know, you have to add new things before you've had the normal amount of time to practice them. So you learn, you know, you learn something new, you practice it a little bit, and then you learn something else new, and you practice that just a little bit, you learn something else new, you practice that just a little bit, and you don't have as much time for things to become solid. You know, in the normal pace, you practice something, it becomes solid, and then you add something onto that, and you make that solid, and so forth. And some students, when they actually would do the accelerated program, they said, it's just too fast, I can't absorb things that fast. And then we would slow back down again. So there's this interplay between the student and the teacher, and that we see that with Krishna and the devotees. You know, that sometimes a devotee will say, Krishna, speed things up for me. And Krishna does, he speeds things up, and then sometimes when Krishna speeds things up, the devotee goes, whoa, that's a little too fast for me. You know, I need to go back to the former level. Or sometimes Krishna speeds things up and you say, you know, yeah, this is working for me. This is great. Woo-wee! You know, we're going quickly. And then other times people, you know, you can speed them up in some things, but then they get to a certain thing. One of my students was going at a you know, pretty good pace in mathematics. I can't remember what it was, but there was something that she really got stuck on, and we had to just work on that thing for an extra couple days. So this is the way Krishna deals with us. It's so nice in Bhagavad Gita 10.10 and 10.11, Tesham Satatyutanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yenam Amupayantite Tesham Evanukam Partam Ahama Gena Jantama Nasayam Yatma Bhavosto Gyanam Deepena Bhashvita. Srila Prabhupada says there that a devotee may have a bona fide guru and the books of the guru, but if they're not making good progress, a Krishna from within will help them. So we always have this Chaita Guru, this Krishna from within, who's an expert teacher and is taking us, responding to our desires to go faster or slower, and knows exactly how to take us forward. And sometimes Krishna may be taking us forward in ways that seem to us like a diversion. This phenomena is noted in all the religious traditions. If you've ever read the allegory, Hinds Feet in High Places, and the protagonist who's trying to get to spiritual perfection through Christianity sometimes complains that she's taken what appears to be a detour. Wait a minute, I'm supposed to go to the high places up there on the mountain, and you're taking me through this desert that seems to be a detour. Why are we going this way? And so forth and so on. So, but sometimes the lesson that we need, the tool that we need to go forward, we have to get from someplace else. You know, when Arjuna and the Pandavas were preparing for the Battle of Kurukshetra, Arjuna meditated, did austerities and meditation in order to go to the heavenly planets and meet his biological father, Indra, and get divine weapons. And so the time that they were in exile in the forest, which seemed like a diversion, those 13 years, they're actually were getting very valuable tools, and they ended up also getting a valuable alliance in the king of Virat and so forth. And of course, that led to the birth of Abhimanyu, so many things. So it may appear to be a diversion. You may think, so Bhima kills this Hidimba, he marries Hidimba, and what does that have to do with anything? But the birth of Ghatotkacha ended up being important later in the Battle of Kurukshetra. So the little things that happen in our lives, the so-called diversions, the difficulties, they're all really part of the story of getting us there. And, you know, sometimes Krishna may see that this life isn't going to work for us. Sometimes Krishna sees, you know, hey, the circumstances of this person's birth and the circumstances of this person's life are such that they're just not going to be able to surmount the difficulties in this life. Better they get a fresh start. And Krishna may take that devotee and have them seemingly have an untimely death so that he can put them into a situation that's more favorable for their advancement. So sometimes going to another life will be more favorable. Therefore we have this confidence. And with this confidence, then we can be both enthusiastic and patient. Then we don't fall into the modes of nature. Enthusiastic that I push myself and I work to the best of my ability without, you know, as they say, you have your comfort zone, your stretch zone, and your panic zone. So we push ourselves out of our comfort zone into our stretch zone, but we don't go into a panic zone. We don't burn ourselves out. We don't give so much so fast. You know, like this young man, he gave so much so fast. And when he didn't achieve Krishna consciousness in a short amount of time after giving so much so fast, he became so burned out that he became offensive and atheistic. So we don't want to do that. At the same time, we don't want to be so patient that we just stay in our comfort zone and we don't practically give anything and we don't really grow so that Krishna has to go and really shake us up. You know, I've given this example before that I was contacted by one devotee and he said, you know, Krishna consciousness has gotten very dry. And within our conversation, it turned out that he had prayed to Krishna, don't push me so fast, go more slowly. And I said, well, you're going so slowly that things have become dry. You know, and on a day-to-day basis, it's kind of a, you know, a catch-22. On a minute-to-minute basis, on a day-to-day basis, we have to live as if we're going to die at any second because we might. We really might, and youth isn't a guarantee, and age isn't a guarantee. You know, I'm at the age where if I die, nobody would be surprised, but I might live another 40 years, who knows? You know, and when you're young, you assume you're going to live a long time, but you could live another 5 minutes. So we have to act in every moment, at every hour, every day, as if that's going to be our last. And at the same time, we have to live as if we are eternal and time is eternal. Because both of those things are true. They're both true simultaneously. It could be my last breath, my last mantra, my last interaction with someone. And at the same time, I am eternal, and I have all of eternity. And to do that again, we have confidence. As Prabhupada wrote to Jayapataka Maharaj, surrender means that one thinks, whatever is meant to be, that I am doing. In other words, that Krishna has me in the right place at the right time, in this particular moment, and that I should do what I'm doing with full attention to every detail, no matter what it is, with Krishna's alone pleasure as my motive. And if we do that, if we assume that whatever is meant to be that I'm doing, let me do it with full attention to every detail, with Krishna's alone pleasure as my motive, if we do that from moment to moment, then we will be making the best use of time, and we will progress to where we want to go. We will achieve what we are trying to achieve, which is full self and God realization in the fastest and easiest way for us, custom designed by the very best teacher who knows us better than we know ourselves and is totally aware of everything. So, questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements?
Muted. Unmuted.
Thank you, Mother Urmila, for another outstanding class. I understand that your time with us on Isanga is numbered, so thank you very much for being with us. Often the passing of a devotee who's probably in the sadhaka stage is understandable, and sometimes it's very bewildering. And I don't know what level of realization, but I imagine very, very high, that Srila Tamala Krishna Goswami Maharaj reached, and yet his passing was just like breathtakingly shocking and not understandable. That's not a question so much as a comment, but Krishna's guiding us, but I may not understand the guidance, or I don't understand the guidance that Krishna is giving others. And sometimes it's very shocking.
Uh-huh. Well, in one sense, having a very quick death is very nice. You know, one doesn't have this long, drawn-out disease and pain and so forth. You know that I think the day before Tamal Krishnamurti's passed, he was talking to some devotees in Mayapur, and they said, "So where are you going?" He said, "Oh, tomorrow I'm going back to home." And then he paused and said, "Back to the UK." And, you know, that statement of his made a number of people wonder if he had some precognizance of what was going to happen. And of course, he was in a holy place. You know, it's interesting if we want to think of, like, you know, what's the perfect death. I suppose each of us has some idea in our mind as to how we would imagine our perfect death. But Krishna is smarter than we are. And he knows what's the perfect time and place and circumstance for us to die, and he can change his mind also. You know, it's also, keep in mind that Krishna's running, especially in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's running a Sankirtan movement which Prabhupada says is happening all over the universe. And when we say that God knows the future is constantly changing. Just like this nice conversation in Chaitanya Bhagavat between Mahaprabhu and Srivas Thakur, when they're talking about the harassment from the Muslim government, and Mahaprabhu says, "Well, I'll deal with it this way, and if that doesn't work, I'll deal with it this way, and if that doesn't work, I'll deal with it this way." You know, when you're running a big organization, you may sometimes need a particular person to do a particular job at a moment's notice. Just like when Prabhupada tried to get the land in Mayapur, and he was having so many difficulties, and finally he says, "Tomorrow you do it." So sometimes Krishna takes devotees because he wants them back home at that moment. Sometimes he takes devotees because they can't make progress in that body, in that circumstance anymore. They've made as much progress as they can in that body. He needs to put them in a different situation. Sometimes he takes devotees quickly because they're needed for some particular service, and they're needed now. And the mood of the devotee is wherever and wherever, whenever, wherever, however, my Lord calls me. I mean, think about it, you know, if Mahaprabhu appeared before you and said, "You're needed on this other planet right now. We need you for some important service on another planet." Would you say, "I have things to finish up here"? "No, we need you right now. Captain, no, right now. Come right now." So that's there. That's the prerogative of our master. Not everybody is going to die like Dhruva Maharaj, where there's a visible Vaikuntha airplane and his form, you know, all the sages see his form turning into luminous gold. And he steps physically, personally on the head of death, who removes his physical body of the five elements and gets into the Vaikuntha airplane and travels through the universe, and the visible to the demigods. And not everybody dies like that. You know, Tukaram died like that. It's in the Bible that Elijah and Moses died like that. In Islam, say Muhammad died like that, but not everybody dies like that. You know, Gaur Govindamarsh's death was pretty cool. He dies in Mayapur on an auspicious day while talking about Jagannath and Mahaprabhu. And he's fine, and he's speaking about Leela, and then he just says, have kirtan, and leaves his body a couple minutes later. So that's pretty far out. But Prabhupada had a long, protracted illness in which he showed us how to deal with that. I mean, there's the examples, different examples for us, how to deal with death in its different forms. You know, I don't think it's possible for us to fully understand. I mean, even in ordinary human life, children cannot understand exactly why their parents or their teachers do things. I mean, it's... And one thing that I've seen repeatedly, having been in a number of managerial administrative leadership positions, is that when you're in a leadership position, you have an overall view of things that people not in a leadership position simply cannot have, no matter how they try to imagine it. It's a different vision. And there's no way that you can, through explanation of any kind, an emotional explanation, a logical explanation, there's no way you can explain to people who are not in a leadership position why you do what you do. You have concerns that they can't understand. And I've seen this over and over again. They just can't. No matter how hard they try, and even if they want to, they're seeing things from their perspective. And I know as a leader, even if it's a small organization, a small group, even if you're leading just 20 people or 50 people, if you think, I can be a buddy with the people I'm in charge of, and I can tell them my concerns and what I'm trying to do, as if they will understand, you very quickly see that it doesn't work. I just had this experience just recently, where a member of a group that I supervise, I was speaking to this person about my planning. And the person became offended because the person felt that I wasn't taking his concerns and his needs as seriously as I should. But I was speaking from the point of view of the needs of the group as a whole. And he just couldn't relate to that. So I see in the same way. We cannot relate to how God sees things. We just can't. I mean, it's not even just that he's so great and we're so small. It's not even like that. But he's running the whole show. We just can't understand. You know, in Fiddler on the Roof, I was just saying this to my grandson yesterday, that Tevye, he sings this song, If I Were a Rich Man. And he says, you know, Lord, who made the lion and the lamb, you decreed I should be what I am. Would it spoil some vast eternal plan if I were a wealthy man? And the fact is, it would. It would spoil some vast eternal plan. There's, you know, this poor guy in Russia is thinking, you know, come on. What difference would it make? Give me what I want, how I want it. But there is a vast eternal plan. Anybody else?
I do have a question. It's kind of related to this. When Srila Prabhupada was gored by that bolt, I had heard that one time he said, at the time he couldn't understand, but then, you know, he understood why it
yes,
happened.
Correct.
But I never heard, so what was the...
I'm pretty sure that because he was gored by a bull, that when he went to get treatment is when he met Sumati Murarji.
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure. I'm not absolutely sure, but I'm pretty sure. I don't know if you've read Radhanaswami's book, Journey Home, but he talks about how he had gone to Vrindavan and he was planning on staying there a brief time. But once he got there, he really loved it. But he'd already told his friend that he was going to meet him up in the Himalayas at a certain date. And then he was just thinking, I wish there was some way, because in those days there weren't like mobile phones, saying, I wish I could communicate with my friend that I'm going to stay longer. Then he got typhoid. And he was forced to stay longer. You know, he also ended up getting bitten by a dog and having to get rabies shots, which ended up forcing the visa people to extend his visa. Any other questions, comments?
Dhanyavad, Sonia Didi.
All right, Krishna.
I really like one of the things you brought up about pacing, you know, and how if you go too fast, you may not be able to absorb things, and if you go too slow, then it's there's other problems connected with that. But one thing I remember, Sridhar Maharaj once said, he quoted that story from Aesop's Fables, the moral to that story, slow but sure wins the race.
Yes.
And he makes the point that you have to go through these stages, you know, consciously, without skipping any, like those mapped out by Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
Yes.
And
you can skip stages if Krishna feels you can skip stages.
Hmm.
You know.
Well, we all have some background, you know, some lives that may have connected with devotional service, so
yes,
they may be picking it up at some,
exactly,
some,
maybe picking it up at a higher level. But also, I mean, Bhanu Swami talks about this. He says, you know, like Prabhupada said, we can attain Krishna consciousness in a moment. If one did that, one would either be going through stages very quickly or skipping stages.
Mm-hmm.
So if Krishna arranges we skip stages, we can, but it's not something that we should decide. Because like I said, when I was working with students, whenever kids wanted to skip stages, 8 or 9 times out of 10, they weren't qualified to do that. But 1 or 2 times out of 10, they were. When they said, you know, I want to skip stages, and I would test them, and they were actually qualified to skip stages. So it is sometimes possible. I mean, just like we have people who take sannyas without going through the grihastha ashram, that's skipping a stage. And we've seen practically that most people who try to do that fall on their face.
Right.
You know, that's our practical experience. I mean, it's interesting, in ISKCON now, the vast majority of people taking sannyas have still never been married. You know, it's like 90-95% of the people that we're giving sannyas to have never been married. And it's interesting, the rule in ISKCON is that the youngest a person can take sannyas is 45. And their idea is, well, you pass the youthful stage, which ends at 40. But Kripa Moya Prabhu, our godbrother Kripa Moya Prabhu, pointed out that the research done among like Catholic priests is that the most dangerous time is 45 to 60. You know, what we call the midlife crisis. That, you know, making it to 45 is doesn't really indicate anything if you've never been married. That between 45 and 60, you're likely to think, oh, you know, I messed up, I missed out, I better go do it before I'm too old. So, you know, I just found that kind of interesting. But we do skip, it's not that we can't skip stages, but it's dangerous for us to plan to skip stages. And most of the time, I see that when devotees want to skip stages, they fall on their face. Yeah, in Bhakti Loka, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing the first few verses of Upadesha Amrita, particularly he's describing, I think, verses 2 and 3, if I can recall. And when he's talking about Niyamagraha, he discusses that there's different stages and there's different rules for different stages, and when you get to a higher stage, you have to abandon the rules of the lower stage and accept the rules of a higher stage. And he says fall downs occur by either going too fast or going too slow. I mean, just like on a highway, there's also minimum speeds. And what the problem of going too slow is you lose the taste. That's the main problem of going too slowly. You know, you become bored and distracted. You're not properly engaged. And in a school, the majority of discipline problems come from just a few sources. You get discipline problems if kids are tired, hungry, sick, or there's some sort of domestic problem in their home. But you also get discipline problems if kids are going too fast or too slow for them. You know, if they're going too fast, they become lost and confused. And if they're going too slowly, they're bored. So they're either, you know, feeling frustrated and incompetent if they're going too fast, or they're just bored if they're going too slowly. And either way, they will get into trouble.
The book by Bhaktivinoda is called Bhakti Loka?
Bhakti Loka.
Bhakti
Loka, yeah. It's, let me see if it's on the database.
Got it.
Yeah, okay.
There's a PDF of it online.
Okay, it doesn't seem... Yeah, Sri Bhakti Loka, The Six Faults and Qualities of Bhakti, and The Six Faults That Destroy Bhakti, Six Qualities That Enhance Bhakti. I'm pretty sure that's verses, 2 and 3 from Nectar of Instruction. Atyahara, Prayasa, Prajapa, Niyamagraha, Janasanga and Loya, and then Utsaha Nishtaya Darya Tat Tat Karma Pravartana Sangha Tyaga and Sadhuvritti. So he goes over each of those, and the section on Niyamagraha, which is the fourth section in the first part, I have found to be just one of the most brilliant pieces of writing by any of our acharyas in terms of what we've been discussing today. I mean, he also talks specifically about enthusiasm, patience, and confidence, but in terms of progression, not going too slowly, not going too fast, that there's different rules of different stages, and another caution is that we're not God, and we have to be careful when we are guiding others that we don't necessarily know what's too fast or what's too slow for them. And you know, Srila Prabhupada would often tell people, pray to Krishna, depend on Krishna. And I think that we need to do that many times as well. That, you know, what's the right pace for us at a particular time may not be the right pace for another jiva. And to encourage people to go slowly when they're capable of going faster, or to go faster when they're not capable of going faster, we end up doing violence to them. So we do have to be very careful in that regard. I have a
you
morning
said
program.
The fourth section of this book? You like the writing?
It's called the Niyamagraha section. It's in the first...
Okay.
The first section deals with the six faults that destroy bhakti, and the fourth section of that first section. So the fourth subsection of the first section is on Niyamagraha. But altogether, it's an excellent book. I mean, it's not a long book, and it's the kind of book that's well worth several rereadings. So I have to go now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.